Welcome to the Rap Soul Podcast, where we dive deep into the world of music that moves our hearts and gets our feet tapping. This is the intersection of rap and soul music from the 80s, 90s, and 2000s. We appreciate you for listening. Share this podcast with a friend or family member who loves music as much as you do. The podcast is hosted by 12 Kyle. Next up, the Rap Soul Podcast.
What's up, y'all? It's your boy 12 Kyle from the Rap Soul Podcast. I want to thank each and every one of you for tuning in as you do each and every week. I really do appreciate it. I also wanted to offer a programming note. This particular episode, the Rap Soul Podcast Classic, is an old episode. And for some, it may have been something that they've heard before because it was initially on the flagship station, the 12 Kyle Podcast, back in 2016. But I wanted to give it to you guys here because the thing is that many of you didn't know my podcast existed in 2016. And the great thing about these episodes is that the information has not changed. It's not dated, and it's going to sound and feel as fresh as it did back then. So sit back and relax and check out this new episode from the Rap Soul Podcast Classic. I appreciate it. 5,000.
Yo. Okay, I'll reload it.
Yo, check it out. Thanks again for checking out another edition of the 12 Kyle Podcast. I'm 12 Kyle. And again, you probably already know that by now. If you haven't done so already, make sure that you subscribe to the podcast. You can find the podcast just about anywhere for free. We're on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, Overcast FM, Pocket Cast. Of course, we're on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/spellitout, TWELVEKYLE. We're on Instagram at 12 Kyle Podcast. And of course, you can find me on Twitter at 12 Kyle. And you can find me also at 12 Kyle Podcast. And coming soon, we will be on Google Play. So no reason not to subscribe. You can find me just about anywhere. All right. So here's what I want to talk about today. Going to do an artist feature. Got to thinking, man, about one of my favorite labels of the 90s. And I started thinking about the rise and the fall of probably one of the most prominent rap labels in the game in the 90s. In the early 2000s, early to mid 2000s, and that would be Rockefeller Records. Rockefeller, obviously, unless you've been hiding under a rock, was spearheaded by Jay-Z, his partners, Dame Dash, and Kareem Biggs Burke. What's interesting about Rockefeller is that they, when they initially set out for all of the talent that Jay-Z has, he couldn't get a record deal. I mean, it's kind of mind-boggling when you think about it. And if you, you know, for you real, real hardcore Jay-Z fans that remember his earlier stuff, he was rapping pretty fast. And, you know, he was in the video with Jazzo and Hawaiian Sophie. And, you know, he had to hit a single, I Can't Give With That. You know, so he was, they were really shopping their deal. And nobody wanted to sign him. They actually, you know, made a couple videos and they went through, I think it was Payday Records, and they ended up getting Rockefeller on with Priority. But they had to basically start their own record label. And this was very, very new, especially in the 90s. Imagine going to, you know, Def Jam or, you know, any of the other major rap labels back then and trying to get a deal. And they say, well, no, you're not good enough. You know, so that's mind boggling in and of itself. The fact that that, you know, they could not get a record label. I remember the first time that I heard Jay-Z, and heard of Rockefeller. It was actually it was the Dead Presidents. I think I want to say it was the B-side. And he had the lyric in the song Dead Presidents. He said, partner, I'm still spending money from 88. And I was like, wait a minute, that's kind of clever. And so like for me, like I'm always big on lyrics, and it's always every time, like the first time that I hear a song, I need to hear one or two lyrics that's going to hook me. Well, that little lyric right there hooked me. So I was like, who is this dude? So I'm watching the video. I never forget, I was watching the video, and you know, they seem kind of, you know, Jay-Z seemed kind of flashy or whatever in the video. And the video didn't look like anything, you know, that we were kind of used to seeing. And, you know, he's out there rhyming, and he's got the backdrop of the World Trade Center in the background. And he's talking about hustling. And I'm like, okay, this is different. And keep in mind now, this was I saw this before the smash Ain't No. So once Ain't No dropped, I mean, it was pretty much a wrap. I mean, that was a huge hit, obviously. Ain't No was a smash for Jay-Z, obviously featured Foxy Brown. Personally, off the Reasonable Doubt album, that's like my least favorite track. I'll get into Reasonable Doubt in just a second, but that was really the start for me as far as like my introduction to Jay-Z and Rockefeller. The interesting thing that a lot of people don't know, I mean, Jay-Z fans know this, but the interesting thing about the record label itself was that Reasonable Doubt, Jay-Z's first album, was supposed to be his first and last album. Like, he had no intentions on being the artist on the label. He was the only artist at the time that they launched, but you know, I don't know if he planned to just be an executive or what have you, or how he, what he planned to do. And then, you know, looking and listening at his story, I don't really know that. I mean, they had a plan, but they didn't have a plan. When I say they had a plan, I don't necessarily know if they had a plan for Jay-Z. I know they had a plan as a label, but they didn't necessarily have a plan for Jay-Z, because he drops Reasonable Doubt in 1996. And, you know, the album is critically acclaimed. Now, I'll be the first to admit, when the first time I heard Reasonable Doubt, I didn't particularly care for it. It dropped in 96. And I'm not going to get into Reasonable Doubt, because there will be a Reasonable Doubt podcast. As you know, this year we're celebrating the 20-year anniversary of some classic albums that dropped in 1996. And Reasonable Doubt is one of them. So that podcast will be dropping in June to coincide with the 20-year anniversary of the podcast. But nevertheless, I think, you know, it was Reasonable Doubt. The first time I heard it, I didn't particularly care for it. And then I listened to it, and then I just fell in love with the album. But Reasonable Doubt really kind of took off, and subsequently Jay-Z took off, and the label grew. And what I want to talk about today on the podcast, just, you know, just give a little synopsis of some of the artists that was on Rockefeller. We're going to talk about, you know, what went wrong. It was the rise and the fall of Rockefeller Records. I also want to talk about some artists that either didn't get on the label that I thought should have been on the label, and some that were on the label that never dropped an album. So first artist I think that you have to mention on the label is my man Memphis Bleek. Now, before you start laughing, Memphis Bleek is obviously Jay-Z's homeboy. You know, the first time I heard him was on Reasonable Doubt. I believe it was Coming of Age. Bleek in the streets, I think, as far as hip-hop fans, catches a lot of flack. You know, there's the Jay-Z line where he said Bleek, you know, would be one, you know, he's one hit away or something like that. And that, you know, in the streets, that's kind of, that phrase is kind of dog Bleek. Here's my take on Memphis Bleek. I think Memphis Bleek is decent. I think, you know, he doesn't blow you away as far as his rhyming. He dropped, you know, quite a few albums on Rockefeller. He doesn't blow you away, but now I will say this much. I don't understand how it actually works, but for some reason, when you get Bleek on a track with Jay, when you get him on a track with Freeway, when you get him on a track with Beans, he does more than hold his own. In fact, when Bleek is on a track with someone else, I think he's solid. I think he's a solid MC. And I mean, he's no threat to Rakim or KRS-One. But I think he's solid, man. And I think, you know, he catches a lot of flack. And I don't think all of it is, you know, deserved. I think Bleach is decent, man. He's a decent cat. He seems to be, you know, if for nothing else, Memphis Bleek is loyal, and Jay-Z is extremely loyal to Bleek. Now, their loyalty has gone a long way. You know, wherever Jay is gone, Bleek is gone. I remember a quote. It was some years back, and I think this was when Jay-Z and Beyonce really started dating pretty heavily. And there were some questions about, you know, Jay's loyalty to Bleek or what have you. And a reporter asked Jay-Z, you know, if you had to choose between, and I don't know where this question came from, but I remember seeing it in print media. I think it was in The Source. It said, if you had to choose between Beyonce or Memphis Bleek. Now, again, at the time, Beyonce was just his girlfriend, and they weren't even acknowledging the fact that they were both dating each other. They said, well, if you had to choose between Bleek and Beyonce, who would you choose? And Jay said, well, I'm choosing Bleek every time. Yeah. Okay, Jay. If you say so, playboy. Nevertheless, man, Memphis Bleek, like I said, solid cat on the roster. One of the other artists that comes to mind when I think about Rockefeller, in fact, probably the second artist that comes to mind every time I think about Rockefeller, is my second favorite artist on the label behind Jay-Z, and that's Beanie Siegel. I was about to say Memphis Bleek. Beanie Siegel. I love Beanie Siegel. Beanie Siegel's first album, The Truth, one of the most anticipated debut albums ever. I love that album. I still play that album to this day. Not only did it live up to the hype, I think it exceeded it. I think Beans, man, it was something just about the way that he rhymes, really, really grimy, raw Philly type sound. And if you're a fan of hip hop, you know that Philly, you know, maybe not, they really don't get the recognition that they probably should as you know, as far as producing MCs, but Philly has had its imprint on hip hop all the way back from, you know, I was about to say PSK, from Schoolie D to Fresh Prince, Jazzy Jeff, even on forward. I mean, like the list goes on and on as far as Philly acts, to The Roots, to obviously Eve. And then, you know, Rockefeller had their ties to Philadelphia through, you know, Beans, Freeway, the Young Guns. So I love Beans. I love listening to that cat, man. I mean, like, he was really, really the street complement to Jay-Z. Not to say that Jay-Z wasn't street, but he was where Jay-Z was, you know, kind of, Jay-Z could have like a party type song. Beans just had just that grimy sound. But he could flow, man. He could flow. He could spit. He could rhyme. Whatever. Any kind of track you wanted Beans to get on, he could ride. So I was, still am, huge fan of Beanie Siegel. And what's interesting to me and a lot of people, and I can't speak for everybody else, but like for me, the first time that I heard Beanie Siegel actually wasn't on a Rockefeller record. The first time I heard him was on a record with The Roots, Adrenaline. Yep, that's right, Adrenaline. So yeah, man, it's crazy. I think, you know, Beans was one of those guys that I think, I'm not sure why he never really blew. And I mean, don't get me wrong, he was a huge artist, but I think like commercially, he never really took off. And I mean, obviously, you're familiar with his story. He had legal problems, in and out of jail, that type of stuff. But man, in fact, his second album was dope too. I'm a huge fan of Beanie Siegel. Anytime Beans dropped something, we were copping it. And I mean, like anytime he was on a mixtape, we were copping it. Anytime he was freestyling, doing anything, we were copping it. So definitely one of my other favorite artists at Rockefeller. The next artist, my man Freeway. The first time I heard Freeway was on 1-900 Hustler. And I never forget, man, he came in first things first, watch your chair. but it was different, man, because he had this high nasally type pitch, but he had bars, man. And one of my favorite moments from Rockefeller, man, was when they took over Hot 97 in New York. And if you, anybody listening to this podcast, if you never heard that freestyle, I mean, like, they went on Funk Flex's show. It was Jay, Nas. Damn. It was Jay, Beans, Freeway, the Young Guns, Oskino and Sparks. And they went on Funk Flex's show and they rhyme, man, for like, I want to say like an hour and a half straight. Some of it was called freestyling, but all of it wasn't freestyle. Most of it was written, but still, it was just the hung. And Jay, and here's the thing, Jay-Z didn't even rhyme. Like, he was just gassing them up. But if you never heard that before, man, do yourself a favor. Go look online. Go to YouTube. I'm pretty sure. Just put, you know, Rockefeller Hot 97 Takeover. Crazy. When I say, I mean, like, Jay had to, he had to stop him from rhyming. Even Bleak was like killing it. but Freeway, man, I love Freeway. His first album, probably one of my favorites from him. That first album was tight, man. I think when you hear Freeway rhyme, you hear Philadelphia, and you hear, you know, one of the things that I loved about listening to him is that, like, you could always hear the hunger in his voice. Like, he was a dude that was like, he always sounded like he was rhyming, trying to get a deal. Like, he was trying, even though he had a deal, he was trying to get a deal. I'm a big fan of Freeway's as well. Another artist on the label was your girl, Emil. Emil. Here's the thing about Emil. I think Emil was probably, she's probably a nice woman. I really don't know what to say. I'm trying not to be negative. Okay, let me just keep it 100. I wasn't impressed with Emil. I just wasn't. I don't understand how or why she got on the label. And that's not to say that she was terrible. I mean, she tried. I'll give her props to Emil for trying. She tried. I wasn't like a fan, and I'm not, you know, if somebody's whack, I'll tell them they're whack, you know, and I'm not saying that she was whack. I just wasn't a fan. Let's just put it like that. I'm not hating anything like that. I just wasn't a fan of what she brought to the table for the label. She did, by the way, have a song with Beyonce, which I didn't find out until about a year ago. Shout out to homie Eclectic. He told me that. Did not know that. And I'm pretty sure that some of you are listening like, huh, she did? Yeah, she had a song with Beyonce, which is kind of interesting because obviously when Emil came onto the label, there were rumors about the fact that she and Jay-Z were dating. Now, that was never confirmed. I don't know. I wish her the best. Another member of the Rockefeller family was my man DJ Clue. Man, what would the 90s be without a guy like Clue? Screaming on your mixtapes, dropping. And what was so dope about Clue? First and foremost, Clue came from the mixtape era. You know what I'm saying? And what I mean by mixtape, the blend tapes. And here's the thing about those mixtapes and blend tapes that Clue and those guys would make was that, like, it was really exclusive stuff. It wasn't stuff off people's albums. It wasn't, you know, remixes of the remixes. It was genuinely, like, if you got a Jay-Z verse on a Clue mixtape, then it was a verse that you would never hear anywhere else. Love Clue, man. Just hearing him yell all over the tracks was always funny. Always, anytime I hear DJ Clue's voice, it takes me back to, you know, the mid-90s when I was in college and listening to DJ Clue tapes. And so he was on the label as well. And I think, you know, Clue had a couple of albums. Of course, now he's not rapping or anything like that, but I mean, his compilation albums were good as well. And those, nobody makes those kind of albums anymore. I thought that was very slept on concept, where you would have a guy like DJ Clue and he's producing these songs, or he's, you know, doing a compilation basically, and the label is releasing it as a compilation CD and it's featuring DJ Clue. It sounds like a mixtape, it looks like a mixtape, but it's an actual album. And Clue was, you know, he was ahead of the game on that. Now, as the years passed, you know, the roster got a little bigger. They signed, you know, Rockefeller signed, you know, a couple more artists, a few that I will name. Obviously, I mentioned the Young Guns, Young Cats out of Philly, Chris and Neef. Man, love those dudes, man. I love their energy, man. They always seemed really, really energetic when it came time to rhyme. Like, they were just down for it. And I remember the first time that I heard them was on that Hot 97 Takeover. And I was like, yo, these dudes gonna blow. And, you know, they never really got a chance to really, really shine like they probably should have. But I thought they were dope. Cam'ron, another artist that came to Rockefeller. Cam'ron, obviously, his ties with Big and his ties with not Big, but Biggs, Kareem Biggs, Burke, and Dame Dash. Because, you know, they're from Harlem. They're all from Harlem. I think Dame and Cam'ron's relationship, you know, was the reason why Cam'ron ended up on the label. But, you know, if you're a fan of Cam'ron's, then you know what he brings to the table as far as, you know, rhyming. And you know what he brings to the table as far as flamboyancy and what have you like that. And then subsequently, when Cam'ron came, rest of the Dipset, Joel Santana came. So that was interesting in and of itself, because from the outside looking in, it looked like Cam'ron was coming in, and Cam'ron didn't necessarily mesh with Jay-Z. He didn't necessarily have to, but he was Dame's man. So you know how it is. If your man's is cool, then you bring on your man's mans. I know that doesn't make any sense, but it does. Nevertheless, man, so Cam'ron came. I'm cool on Cam'ron. I'm not, like, you know, a huge fan. I thought he was decent. You know, some people really, really love Cam'ron. I'm not one of them. I don't hate him. You know, I mean, if he's got a nice track, I might listen. I'm not just, you know, he never did anything that just kind of blew me away. But the first album that he dropped on the label was tight. I did get that album. But, you know, like I said, I think he ended up there primarily because of his relationship with Dame. If, you know, Cam'ron doesn't, and I think that, yeah, that was the Come Home With Me album. If he doesn't have that relationship with Dame, then he probably never makes it to Rockefeller. Jadakiss actually dropped an album on Rockefeller right towards the end of the label, The Last Kiss. That was interesting in and of itself, because, you know, having Jadakiss on the label definitely solidifies, you know, the label. Definitely solidifies Jadakiss. Not that he needed to be solidified, because you already knew what he did when he was on Bad Boy. But that was something I think was just one step. The label was going through a lot of transition at the time. So, you know, it didn't really pop like the way that it should have. And last but not least, as far as, you know, artists that were on the label, guy out of Chicago, producer, rapper, kid by the name of Kanye West. What can I say, man? Kanye is probably, I'd probably say for me, Kanye was probably third on the label. Not as far as talent, but as far as, like, if I had to rank him as far as just lyrical, how I liked him at the time. But producing wise, Kanye was incredible. His sample, his sped up samples that he used early on, he really blessed Jay-Z, and not just Jay-Z, but the whole record label with some crazy beats. And then I think people really were surprised, because they initially signed Kanye because of his beat making ability. They had no idea that he could rhyme. And he drops College Dropout. The rest is history, man. I mean, that by far is one of the best albums to ever come out on Rockefeller. And you could make a case that it's right up there, probably in the top three as far as albums to come out on Rockefeller, and that includes Jay-Z's releases on Rockefeller. Love Kanye, man. Still love Kanye. I'm not as big a fan of Kanye now as I used to be, but the Rockefeller Kanye, man, he was cold. He was, and it's not to say that Kanye's not cold now. Kanye's just different now. I mean, like, he's doing different things. You know, his music, I don't think, is as put together as it was before. He's gotten better. And he's a much bigger star. I mean, you can make a case that he's just as big a star, you know, globally as, well, I don't know if he's just as, well, he may be just as big as, he may be bigger than Jay-Z. It depends on who you ask. But he's still making music. So, you know, and I think at the end of the day, Kanye enjoys making music. And I think as long as he enjoys making music, I think people still will get something from it. Personally, you know, I can't really get into what he's doing right now. I listened to The Life of Pablo, so it's okay. You know, it's okay. Didn't blow me away. It's okay. But nonetheless, man, Kanye on Rockefeller was incredible. Incredible. And again, that was another find that, you know, that they weren't necessarily anticipating that they got. And, you know, he was a gem. He was a gem for the label. So now you ask, that was the rise. What happened to the fall? What happened to Rockefeller Records? Tell you what, let's take a quick commercial break. We'll come right back and I'll tell you what happened.
I don't know if that's right. I know that you grew up in a district where drug dealing was quite normal.
Yeah.
And you became a drug dealer yourself.
Yeah.
Very young.
Yeah. I grew up in around the 80s, right? Around in Marcy Projects in Brooklyn, which is really tough neighborhood. And that was like for the first time we had a whole neighborhood got hit with a big crack epidemic. No one had never seen anything like this. And so I grew up in the middle of a time where there were young guys, 15, 16 years old, with Uzi machine guns in the project. So imagine this, like normal day, kids outside playing double dutch and ice cream truck going by, and then guys come running by shooting. Like that would happen in my projects, you know. So, you know, it forces you to grow up really fast, and it's kind of sad because it robs you of your innocence, you know, as a kid. A child should be able to just
Can you remember your first drug deal?
My first drug deal, mm-hmm. Like my first transaction. Mm-hmm. No, I can't. It was a long time ago. But on TV, I'll tell you later.
If you want a podcast where culture, conversation, and life collide, where you get insightful commentary, engaging discussions, and a fresh perspective on everything, then you need to listen to the 12 Kyle podcast. Hosted by the one and only, yours truly, 12 Kyle, a voice that you know and trust. This podcast will bring you thought-provoking moments, compelling stories, and a whole lot of fun. Whether you're a first-time listener or just tuning in, each episode promises to be something new and exciting. So sit back, relax, join 12 Kyle, myself, and my guests as we break down the world around us and give you stories that you've never heard before. From nostalgic throwbacks to everything in between, the 12 Kyle podcast is a front row seat to this conversation. Subscribe now and never miss an episode of the 12 Kyle podcast, where the vibe is always real and the discussion is always worth your time. Are you feeling nostalgic for the golden eras of rap and soul music? If so, tune in to the Rap Soul podcast. We are your weekly journey through the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, spotlighting the music and the hidden gems that shaped the soundtrack of our lives. From the powerful beats to the soulful melodies, we bring you the best of the past with fresh insights and stories. Rediscover the music that defined a generation. Subscribe to the Rap Soul podcast and enjoy the vibes. And just like that, we're back. At the top, I mentioned the rise. Talked about some of the artists on Rockefeller. I mean, not only were they making multi-million dollar albums, they had all of these tours and everything. I mean, like, the wave of success was riding high, and Jay-Z was on it. They also had Rockefeller Films, which produced movies like Streets Is Watching in 1998, Backstage, State Property, Paid in Full, Paper Soldiers, which I thought was awful, Death of a Dynasty, Jay-Z's movie Fade to Black, which, you know, kind of premiered his retirement, State Property 2, just to name a few. So, I mean, like, everything was going so well, and then things weren't going so well. Now, here's the thing. If you want to know who people blame, it really just depends on who you ask when you ask about the fall of Rockefeller. Some people are going to say Jay-Z. Some people will say Dame. I think it's a little bit of both. You know, depending on who you ask, Jay-Z in the mid 2000s, he became less and less, you know, on the scene as far as Rockefeller was concerned. Everybody knew that Dame handled the business side of it. Not to say that Jay-Z wasn't a businessman, but you know, Dame was that pit bull for the label. And, you know, subsequently he did some things. He signed some artists, like I mentioned, Cameron, ODB, just to name a few. And I'm not really here to say that those signings were against, you know, Jay's wishes, but I think the proverbial straw broke the camel's back when Jay-Z allegedly was out of town. I think he was like in Saint-Tropez or something like that. And Dame Dash was on the radio in New York City saying that he was naming Cameron the president of Rockefeller. Now, at the time, Jay-Z was sort of transitioning into the vacant spot of president at Def Jam. Def Jam had the joint venture with Rockefeller. So, you know, Rockefeller was its own label, but they had a 50-50 joint venture with Def Jam. Subsequently, I think that move of Dame even mentioning Cameron being the president of Rockefeller, I think that rubbed Jay the wrong way. Now, you know, to this day, and to their credit, they really have not aired out what really, really happened. Jay's given his side, Dame's given his side. And I think if you listen to both of them talk, you have to kind of figure out who do you want to believe, because the truth is somewhere in the middle. Nonetheless, I'm pretty sure Jay was like, nah, man, you're not going to name him the president. Not when Bleak has been here all these years. We got to give Bleak a job. but nonetheless, basically they fell out, and, you know, they tried to keep things on a business tip, and they tried to keep the friendship going. And it just, to me, on the outside looking in as a fan, it looked like they were going in two different directions. Ultimately, Jay-Z took the president's job at Def Jam and ended up buying out Biggs and Dame Dash. So not only was he over Def Jam, but at that point, he actually owned Rockefeller. And Jay-Z mentioned in articles that he said, and here's a quote. So I was like, let me get Reasonable Doubt. I'll give up the rest of my masters. I'll give up Rockefeller Records. I'll give up my president and CEO of Def Jam Recordings, everything. Just give me my baby to hold on to, so 10 years down the line, I can look back and I got something. I'm not empty handed. And I was the one being offered everything, and I thought that was more than fair. And when that was turned down, I had to make a choice. I'll leave that for people to say what choice they would have made. That's about it. I don't really want to talk about Dame or Biggs. I don't have nothing negative to say about them. Close quote. I'm not buying that. I think that, like I said, I think the truth is somewhere in the middle. Now, Dame Dash went on to the left, and he started the Dame Dash Music Group. And subsequently, as I mentioned earlier, what happened was when Jay and Dame split, their roster was split as well. So artists had to figure out, am I going to roll with Jay? Am I going to roll with Dame? You know, some were contractually still bound to, you know, Rockefeller, so they had to make a choice. I think the guy that really got caught, the biggest artist that got caught in the crossfire was Kanye. I think Kanye deep down wanted to roll with Dame, but Kanye's not crazy. He knew where Def Jam was going. He knew where, you know, Rockefeller was going with under Jay-Z's leadership. So he rolled with Jay. You know, same for Beans. Beans was, you know, his legal problems were really, really mounting. So he was stuck. Freeway was stuck. And it's almost like everybody on the label was, well, we knew Bleak was going with Jay. I mean, like, that was a given, right? So it went south. And it seemed like it went south really, really fast. And Jay-Z ultimately, you know, took control of Def Jam, and subsequently a few years later ended up leaving Def Jam. So, you know, and he, you know, went on to start his own little thing. So, you know, Rockefeller Records is no more. And it's, as a fan, it's sad. And then more importantly to me, I think, you know, they lost a friendship. And to their credit, they don't, at least I haven't heard them bash each other publicly. And this has been, you know, almost 10 years now that they've gone their separate ways. So I give Jay and Dame both credit for that. They haven't let whatever ill will that they may have towards each other spill into magazines or radios for ratings or anything like that. It's unfortunate. I think one of the other things that was really, really sad about the label was that there were some artists that I think that should have been on the label, and there was a few that were on the label that never got an album to drop. First artist to come to mind that was not on the label was Foxy Brown. To this day, I still don't understand why Foxy never was signed to Rockefeller. Now, she was subsequently signed to Def Jam, and she released her album under the Def Jam umbrella. But she was, and so she worked with Jay-Z, obviously, and she'd been working with Jay-Z since she was like 15, 16 years old. And they have a friendship or relationship or situationship. I don't know what you want to call it. But they, you know, they are cool, and or at least they were cool. I don't know how cool they are now, but I'm assuming that they're still cool. So, you know, anyway. So it's like, I think Foxy would have been perfect for Rockefeller. So it's like, you know, you don't sign Foxy, but you sign Emil. Yeah. Okay. All right. If you say so, that's mind-boggling to me. I mean, I think Foxy would have been perfect for the label. Nonetheless, Emil was signed, and, you know, the rest is history. So I never really understood that. Never understood why Sauce Money never made it to the label. Sauce Money obviously appeared on Reasonable Doubt. He did production. I think he helped with production on Jay-Z's second album, Volume 1. Good friend of Jay-Z's. I don't know why he never made the label. Or never signed with the label. I don't even know what Sauce Money's doing right now. But I hope he's doing well. So, you know, those are kind of disappointing. One artist in particular that stands out to me that was on the label and never had an album drop, the Mash Out Posse. That's right, M.O.P. Man, I love M.O.P. And M.O.P. signs to Rockefeller, and they never drop an album on Rockefeller. I don't understand why. I understand why. I mean, like, they got, you know, when they signed with Rockefeller, that's when this whole split thing was happening. So, you know, they never got a chance to really, really shine. And I mean, now, to be honest, M.O.P. is really too hardcore for commercial, you know, the commercial and the poppy songs and stuff like that. I mean, like, the biggest song is Annie Up, and that's about jacking people. So, I mean, so you take it for what it's worth. But I love M.O.P., man. I love their style. I love that sound. I love the way they get down. But they just never made a record on Rockefeller. Would it have helped Rockefeller? Probably not. But I think it would have helped their careers. So it just never happened. And that's unfortunate. I would have liked to have seen, you know, more albums from Jadakiss. But again, he got caught in the mix. He got caught in the mix. And, you know, what could he do? So, yeah, those are a couple of artists, man. I think that, you know, I would have really loved to have seen them shine together. I would have loved to have seen Rockefeller, you know, ride this thing out. And it's no knock on what Jay-Z has done, you know, with Tidal and all of these other things that he's done. But it's, you know, as a fan, it's a little bittersweet to look at a Rockefeller, you know, or to look at Jay-Z and see him, you know, with Beyonce and Little Blue Ivy. And, you know, you just, for so many years, man, all we saw was Dame. You know, like, we don't even see Bleak anymore. But, I mean, you know, I guess you you get married, you have a kid, I guess you got to move on. I don't know. But it seemed to me like, just like I said, from the outside looking in, Jay-Z and Dame Dash had more than just a business relationship. They seemed to be boys. And, you know, Jay-Z is the godfather of Dame's son. So, you know, I don't think when you name somebody your godfather, I don't think, you know, you, I mean, I think those are important people in your life. And it's unfortunate that Rockefeller, you know, rose to the top and fell. I mean, crashed and burned in the worst way. What will become of the people who were on this label? Well, I mean, you can see for yourself. I mean, of all the people that I've named, who's popping right now? Not a lot. Safe to say, Kanye is probably the biggest Rockefeller, I don't want to call him a reject, but, you know, biggest person from the label right now. And he's doing well, you know, musically and, you know, celebrity wise. So, again, as a fan, it's a little bittersweet. I can't lie. I wanted to see Rockefeller take it all away. But nonetheless, they made some great music. And I think that in and of itself, at the worst case, is something that we all can celebrate. That's going to do it for me. Thanks again for checking out another edition of the 12 Kyle Podcast. I'm 12 Kyle. I'll holler at you next time. 5,000.
Thank you for listening. This concludes the episode. Be sure to subscribe to the Rap Soul Podcast. You can find the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Follow the podcast on social media. And feel free to continue this discussion on our Reddit page. More importantly, share this podcast with a friend or family member who loves music as much as you do. Until next time, 5,000.